And welcome aboard, folks. It is John Henry here once again for our 8 p.m. show. Let me take these glasses off so you don't have to stare at the reflection of my monitor all day. We are here and we are live on YouTube. I've got a couple of pretty little graphics up. Of course, this one up here is probably blocked by the big live thing, but you can see the Twitter, you can see the website, the contribution links, and the Facebook stuff at the bottom. Thank you very much for tuning in and joining us. We are slowly getting to the point where we actually kind of almost know what the heck we're doing here. And yeah, welcome to the show. Tonight, we are going to talk about liberalism. That word, liberal, and what it means in this world, and why it's so easy for us to get confused, and why so many people use it in so many destructive ways. So let's get to the poli-sci 101. Liberal is opposed to conservative. What do these words mean? Put simply, at the fundamental level, a conservative wants to preserve things the way they are. A liberal wants them to change. These are not, in spite of the way they're misused by the media, in spite of the way nearly every single person watching this and every single person in this country and everywhere around the world misunderstands it, there is no inherent left or right bias to liberalism or conservatism, okay? Liberalism is not necessarily progressivism. Conservatism is not necessarily we don't even have a good word for it, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean that you oppose social programs and things like that, right? Taken in their purest forms, in their most fundamental meanings, right now, for instance, it would be a liberal who would say, end Social Security, because Social Security is an existing program, and so ending it would be a fundamental change, as opposed to the conservative who wants to keep Social Security. We get these labels mixed up and mixed around largely, like I said, because they're misapplied constantly. And fundamentally, we've kind of changed those meanings, right? And so in, common conversation and what have you, very often it is seen as, liberal is left, conservative is right, liberal is pro-labor, conservative is pro-business, and really none of these things are true, okay? And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. And I know I haven't gone into a whole lot of my background here, but I actually have a minor in political science. And one of the things that really surprised me when I was taking my coursework classes for that, I took a 3,000 level class in comparative ideologies. And what I found out was that there is no consensus definition of liberalism within political science. Okay, by definition, because liberalism tends to play the big tent, nearly anybody can fit inside of that tent. Probably one of the more notable, I won't say distortions, but one of the more notable novel uses of the concept of liberalism came from the economist Milton Friedman, right? And Friedman, if you're into economics, you will recognize him as a real bastard. But he also proclaimed himself a liberal because when he was writing in his context, we were in a pretty progressive situation, and we were moving more and more towards strong social programs and things like that. And he wanted that to change. He wanted to eliminate the programs and so on and so forth. And so that was actually a liberal position from where he was. And we get confused on this stuff. Same thing with conservatism, right? Everybody thinks, oh, conservatism is religious people. Conservatism is the homophobes and the bigots. That's not true, okay? All that conservatism, small c, conservatism, is hey, I pretty much like things the way they are. And let's not just change things for change's sake. Let's be very careful and considered. And this is why you see, right, you can go back and find interviews with President Obama, even during his first campaign, where he would say flat out, I'm a conservative, right? And his policies generally bore that out, right? He was not one to just make giant sweeping changes without careful consideration and without necessity, without need. This is reflected in his position on gay marriage, right? When we saw him, quote unquote, evolve into supporting gay marriage, one of the reasons why, ideologically, it took him that long to take that step is because gay marriage is a liberal proposition. It is a big change. And a conservative, a small c conservative, looks at that and says, well, do we really need to change that? Let's think really hard about that. Let's consider it. Let's convene a symposium. Let's have conversations, etc., etc. And so once you get that, once you wrap your head around what conservatism and liberalism really are, then all of a sudden you could start breaking loose of some of the rhetorical traps and some of the sort of prefabricated arguments that we find in politics in this country with, oh, I'm a liberal, oh, I'm a conservative, oh, you stupid, let's make the liberals cry, let's make the conservatives cry again. The recurring theme, right? This is all kind of distractions to keep us arguing over things that aren't really relevant and don't really matter to the core questions that we're facing as a society. But what they do help to do is break us up into little groups that can fight with each other. You're the opposite of me, so I must oppose you. Okay, it often surprises people because politically, ideologically, if I go take a political compass test, you will generally find me way down in that bottom left corner of libertarianism and on the left. Right, which left-wing libertarianism is not something you see a lot of in this country, although it's growing. And in that same vein, I am a small c conservative in many ways, and also a small r Republican in many ways. That doesn't mean I'm a member of the Republican Party. Both of our major political parties, and indeed our entire form of government, is Republican, small r, right? A Republican with a small r is simply somebody that believes that there should be a check and balance against pure democracy, the will of the people. It's a recognition that sometimes a million people can be wrong, okay? And the thing for me that really drove this home was a few years ago, you started to see these state-level constitutional amendments that were, in most cases, ratified by the voting public, by a Democratic majority, that outlawed gay marriage. Okay, and so you have to be a little careful there, and that's not to say that I don't believe in democracy, or I think all people are stupid, or whatever. That's a whole different set of conversations. What it does mean is that to go to a pure democracy where it's the voice of the people, majority rules, and that's it, opens you up to what Jefferson referred to as the tyranny of the majority. And Jefferson himself was engaged in the tyranny of the majority at the time he wrote that, right? Because he owned slaves. And that was, you know, that was sort of the majority position to have at that time. And of course, it's inhumane and it's wrong, period. Human beings are not property. But so sorting these labels out and getting sort of to the bottom of these things and breaking away all of the emotional valence that have been marketed into these terms by various political actors and interested parties helps us to step back and first question what we really are, ourselves, and where our ideology really is, and also helps us to kind of sort out and sort through and work past a lot of the babble and a lot of the distractive arguments that we get into in this culture, going back and forth Because it's, you know, liberal versus conservative, and so on and so forth. So the next thing becomes, so how does liberalism differ from progressivism? Okay, and this also can be a little bit thorny and a little bit tricky. Liberals, in the core definition, in the pure definition of liberal, liberals want change. They want as much change as possible, as quickly as possible, as radically as possible, right? The more change you want, the more radical the change, the more quickly you want it, the more liberal you are. Progressives can be liberal or conservative. It depends not only on their current context, but also on what their ideological goals are, right? So, as a progressive, I want to have a solid public education system. And so as a progressive, I want to preserve the current fundamental basics of the public education system in this country, the K-12 education system. That actually makes me a conservative. I want to hold on to the system that exists. What makes me liberal in that context is I want to expand that to include higher education, publicly funded college education. That is a liberal and progressive proposition. It is liberal because it is a radical change. It is progressive because it advances the interests of humanity as a whole. It brings us forward or upward, hopefully, that's the goal, into a more enlightened place and into a more advanced place. Progress, right? Progressive. So progressivism and liberalism are not the same thing. By the same token, liberalism or progressivism and conservatism are not always fundamentally opposed. And again, you know, I keep going into these questions of nomenclature and labels, and a lot of people, well, why do you care? What difference does it make? On and on and on. Why it matters is if we have a solid understanding of what these labels mean, then we can start to see how these labels are used against us. You have what I was talking about last night with manipulative language and advertising and things like that, right? So if we buy too closely into these labels as they're sold, now all of a sudden we're open to this possibility that somebody can just jump in and say, well, I'm a liberal. Okay, maybe I'll listen to you then because you're one of me, you're on my team. And there's every possibility that this person is completely the opposite of you ideologically. You know, it would be liberal to say, let's, you know, round up everybody except for the top 10 richest white men in the country. That would be a liberal thing because it would be a radical change, right? But most people hearing that would think it's conservative. And so... we start to get into trouble and get into the weeds with this stuff when you start seeing things like this vote blue no matter who, right? That's a very popular thing that's going around. And I think a lot of it's being driven by the moderate centrist and slightly right wing wing of the you know, segment of the Democratic Party. I think is driving a lot of that. And the idea is, well, it doesn't matter who we get to replace Donald Trump as long as it's somebody that's not Donald Trump. Okay, well, that's, first of all, not necessarily blue because he could face a challenge from the right, an open challenge from the right. He's already facing challenges from the right, but they're all running as Democrats. But also, and I touched on this a couple of nights ago, right? A lot of people forget that former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke, ran as a Democrat, right? When he was running for office back in the early 80s, he always ran as a Democrat. And part of the reason why he did that was because of this confusion, right? To play on that and to play games with it and to misdirect and to mislead us. Okay, but when you start jumping into that vote blue no matter who, now all of a sudden anybody that shows up and claims to be a Democrat or a liberal automatically has your vote. Okay. And we're seeing this play out right now in a really dangerous way, I think, with Michael Bloomberg's candidacy, because Michael Bloomberg was a registered Republican up until a couple of years ago. He donated, for instance, he gave $3 million to the election campaigns of Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, who was definitely a right-wing and large capital R Republican Party Republican. And now all of a sudden he just calls himself a Democrat. And suddenly you've got, 30-40% of the people in the country who consider themselves Democrats going, oh yeah, I'll vote for that guy, he's a Democrat, and he's not crazy Bernie. Again, we're being played, folks. These are people who are playing games with words, playing games with nomenclature, playing games with phrasing and ideas that have a heavy emotional valence, positive or negative. It means a lot to us to hear that word liberal, that's my tribe, or conservative. And those things can be used to manipulate us and to guide us into making decisions that turn out to be exactly the opposite of what we thought we were voting for. Right. I remember talking with my dad, who passed away many years ago, but he was alive during the first Obama campaign for president. And one of the things that he said that always kind of stuck with me, was that people were hearing things from him that he wasn't saying, from Obama that he wasn't saying. One of the things was this idea that everybody thought that Obama was just going to end the war in the Middle East, bang, snap his fingers, and it was done, and he didn't do that. And people were really mad. Oh, how can you do that? Well, maybe that wasn't the smartest thing to do, right? And again, this is Obama's conservatism, right? He's being careful. He's being thoughtful. He's being very considerate of his actions and his plans, and what will the impacts be, and is this really what we want to do? The same thing with like using drone strikes, and that was actually I wrote an article about that at the time. People just going nuts over drone strikes. Oh, well, I can't believe he used those drones. I'm so disappointed. The reality is that while obviously the perfect world scenario is we don't use drone or any other kinds of strikes, the levels of what they call collateral damage, which is a euphemism that I can't stand because it means killing innocent people, right? The numbers of innocent people killed by drone strikes under Obama were way, way, way lower than any previous conventional or remotely conducted warfare. But because it was easy to point to that, that became a talking point against him. Oh, he's a warmonger, blah, blah, blah. He's a terrible person. He did drone strikes. Okay, but what does that really mean, right? And again, it's all about getting deep into understanding what the words that are being used against us mean, okay? This idea that just because somebody says they're liberal means that they are a progressive left-wing, pro-labor, pro-welfare person is terrifyingly wrong. Okay, and it's terrifying because it can and is used to con us into supporting candidates who really don't share ideological space with us. And this was, I said this a lot during the 2016 primary season, when you had, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton going at each other. Without relitigating that conflict, the reality is that Hillary Clinton is not particularly progressive. She's not particularly liberal, right? This is the woman that came out and talked about pipe dreams and we're not going to have and we can't and on and on and on. And there's all these excuses why we can't have progress in this country and we can't create the systems that we want that work, systems that other nations operate just fine, right? But because she was a liberal, people bought into it and said, yeah, I'm going to go for that. And then that moderate sort of centrist core in the Democratic Party, who was holding a lot more power then than they do now, although they still have considerable party, they were able to literally disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of voters because they weren't real Democrats, we end up with this moderate centrist running against a radical left winger, radical right winger in Donald Trump. And this election, just like the 2016 election, is primarily about people are fed up with the machine as it exists. Okay, right now we have a very liberal and becoming more liberal population, and we are faced with a wide range of conservative candidates, candidates who want to preserve the status quo, candidates who want to hold on to this sort of hierarchical structure that we have in place, where you have, you know, all these small group of folks with all the money sitting at the top, and everything else flows from them, and they make all the decisions, and all the decisions are made in their best interests rather than in the best interests of the people. And so the core takeaway, I guess, that I want to get out for folks with this particular conversation is to sort of inoculate you against the abuse of these words, right? And right now, again, you know, Michael Bloomberg is such a great example of this, because he's out there running, boy, I'm a Democrat, and I'm on the left, and I'm going to run as a Democrat because blah, blah, blah. No. No. First of all, you can change labels anytime you want to. It doesn't change who you are. Bloomberg's policies that he has implemented in New York City have been tremendously authoritarian. And a lot of times what we think of when we think of liberal is anti-authoritarian. And there's just nothing that is anti-authoritarian about Michael Bloomberg. This is the guy that started that stop and frisk crap in New York that targeted and victimized so many black people, especially young black men. I just read some statistics on that where it was like there was, I think it was a year, 1 year, there were 650,000 police interactions in New York City, and like 335,000 of them involved black men between the ages of 14 and 25, right? Now, you could say that's liberal because we're living in a country where we're supposed to have, you know, equality of opportunity and equality under the law. And so that certainly marked a radical change away from that. And that is liberal, but it's definitely not progressive, certainly not left wing, and definitely not anti-authoritarian. And those are the three things most people think of when they hear that word liberal. That's how they think of themselves, and consequently, when somebody else puts that label on, that's how they think of those people. You see the same thing again with a lot of these social media groups and so on and so forth, that, you know, they will use that liberal label to attract traffic, and they'll throw out some memes that, you know, attack Donald Trump or attack George W. Bush and appeal to people who identify as Democrats or as not being Republicans. And in reality, when you start watching how these people operate, they're very authoritarian, they're very tight, they're very, you know, they have absolutely no problem engaging in dirty tricks and manipulation, locking out other voices that are ostensibly part of that same ideological band, because, again, they're not really engaged on an ideological level. What they care about is how you perceive that word liberal and how they can make money from it, okay? And this is one of the reasons why I don't engage in that stuff, and one of the reasons why I will say things like some of the things I've already said in this podcast or in this live stream that I know some people who identify as liberal or democratic or left-wing aren't going to like, because I don't believe our interests are served by continuing to engage in these dishonest manipulative games, right? We continue to recursively advance toward this sort of Orwellian doublespeak world where we're rewriting history, redefining words, and, you know, that's One of the real common ones is when you see people that identify as Republicans arguing online, they'll talk about how, well, you know, it was the Republicans that were the party of Lincoln. Well, yeah, but there was a gigantic polar shift between the Democrats and Republicans in the late 19th and early 20th century, right? The Republican Party of today has nearly nothing in common with the party that Lincoln ran under. And this is, again, the way that words and language can be used to convince us to emotionally invest in things that are directly opposed to our best interests. Okay, so now somebody comes up and says, "Oh yeah, here comes Michael Bloomberg. I'm a liberal Democrat. I'm a liberal Democrat. I'm a liberal," and we elect him, and now it's stop and frisk all across the country. Now nobody can buy a big gulp anywhere because we fell for that language, we fell for that labeling, we fell for that binary thinking and easy mode thinking. And one of the things that I have really trying to get across here to everybody, I genuinely, my number one goal is not to get you to agree with me ideologically. My number one goal in doing all of these shows, or at least the ones that relate to politics and social issues, is to get you to think more clearly and carefully and critically about the things you're hearing and seeing. Okay, because it is a multi-billion-dollar industry in this country to blow smoke up your ass to try to get people continuously installed in power that will gleefully advance the interests of the ownership class. Okay. And that's what we have to stand against. That's what we have to stop from happening because those people are killing us. Right? These are the people that are running the strip mines. These are the people that are doing the fracking. These are the people that continue to refuse to care about the long-term environmental impacts of their behavior. And they are choking the world out. We have to stand up against that, or we're not going to be able to. We are standing on the verge of destroying the capability of this planet to sustain human life. And the reason that we seem to have such a hard time getting out of that spot is largely due to the way we're manipulated with language. So that's why these things are important to me and why I feel like it's important to get them out to you and to induce you to think about them. Okay. Another very popular use of this, you see, we talked about it the other night, right? The national debt. Well, we've got to lower the national debt. The national debt functionally is the money in your pocket and in your bank account, right? The national debt is dollars circulating. If there's no national debt, there's no money, there's no dollars in circulation, and we have no economy. And people don't understand that because they're taught, right? And we're taught to believe that a federal budget should be balanced like a household budget, which is absolutely not true. They're nothing alike, and to try to put them over as being alike is really dangerous and stupid, because we end up going, oh yeah, we eliminated the national debt and now I'm broke. Right? We have to be careful with our words. We have to be careful with our labels. It is incumbent on each of us, as human beings and as citizens of a free country, it's our duty to understand these things and to understand them well. Okay? We have an obligation to the hundreds and thousands and millions of people who fought and died to create this country the way it's supposed to be. To try to make sure it stays the way it's supposed to be. You know, and even Jefferson recognized that democracy is not of much use if you have a population that is not educated, that does not understand the issues that are being fought and the words that are used to fight them. Okay, so again, you know, if you want to be call yourself liberal, that's fine. And the functional reality is, as you go through your day and have conversations, to try to split this hair in an internet argument over a Facebook comment or something like that is a waste of time. Okay, you're just not going to get through on that level, unfortunately. I wish we could, because for one thing, I'd have been a lot more effective by now. But the core behind this, again, is that to keep us confused and misinformed and hung up on labels helps keep us distracted and helps keep us impotent to work together to fight back against the ownership class who are exploiting us, taking advantage of us, and stealing our real wealth, our resources, the things that we need to create the world that we want to live in. We can't fight back if we don't even know what we're fighting for, or if we can't agree on what we're fighting for. Okay? And, you know, it's, you end up with all these convolutions. Well, I'm socially liberal, but fiscally conservative. That doesn't mean anything, right? Fiscally conservative. I don't know what people think that means, even. You don't want to spend money? You don't want the government to spend money? Because if you don't want the government to spend money, what you're saying is you don't want any money. Every dollar starts with the government spending it. Every dollar that is out there right now started life as a government expenditure. That's just the functional reality of the situation. And so we can get tied up into these silly arguments and into these pointless, self-destructive ideas that work directly counter to and directly against what we think we're fighting for. And again, that's a real dangerous thing. That's a real dangerous situation when you start sliding into that sort of Orwellian doublespeak where, you know, a word can mean anything and an idea can mean anything. Well, you know, here we go, right? War is peace. Ignorance is strength. Freedom is slavery, right? And the hell of that is, if you read 1984, instead of just telling people you read it, Orwell actually makes a really great argument to validate that statement that freedom is slavery, right? You can rationalize that. And if you're not careful, you'll start believing it. And then all of a sudden, now you're a voluntary slave. You've agreed to enslave yourself. And of course, that is not something that leads to individual liberty or to a free country or to anything good. And so I'm not seeing a whole lot of traffic tonight on the live stream, and that's all right. It's early days yet. We're still building the old audience up and all that stuff. I just really wanted to get this out there, right? The title, the subtitle of the show is Liberal, what isn't, and why it matters, okay? So, Social Security is not liberal. It exists. It's already there. To get rid of Social Security would be liberal, right? That's a radical change. The idea of robust social welfare programs in and of itself is not particularly liberal. We have social welfare programs. The liberal aspect of it is that some of us would like those social welfare programs to actually work, and that requires some fairly radical change to those programs. The idea of universal health care is not a liberal idea per se when you look at it on a global scale. Like, I don't remember the exact numbers, but something like 130 out of 170 countries on this planet have a single-payer healthcare system. That's not a very liberal idea if, you know, the majority of the world is doing it. Right? Something like, you know, whatever it works out to, depends on how you count them. It's like 32 out of 33 of the, first world countries on the planet have implemented this. And yet we still insist that for some reason it can't work here because it's too liberal. And you see this all the time, and you see it it's just constant with people throwing that label around like it's an epithet. All you stupid liberals. Well, what do you think that means? What do you think it means to call me a liberal, right? Because if I say, well, I don't believe women should vote, that's a liberal position in the current context because women have that right. Okay, the conservative position in the current context is women should vote just like men because that's how things are, that's the status quo, and to preserve the status quo is fundamentally conservative, to change it is fundamentally liberal. Okay, and again, it's not, I'm not going into this and I'm not going on about this because I expect there to be some massive sea change where we all start using words properly or anything like that. It's just to get these ideas into your head of how these words are used to manipulate you, to artificially cause you to identify with ideologies that you don't agree with. Okay? Yeah, I could go on and on and on about this. And frankly, I don't want to. I think the point is made at this point. Just don't get caught up in this labeling scheme, okay? And just because somebody says they're a liberal doesn't mean that they support the LGBTQ community. Just because somebody says they are liberal does not mean they aren't racists. Just because somebody says they're liberal does not mean that they believe in broad diversity and equality of opportunity, okay? That's just not the case. And in some cases, it's exactly the opposite of the case, right? Repealing the Civil Rights Act of 1964 would be a pretty liberal thing to do in the current context because that's law and it's been law for 50 years. Changing that is a liberal move. Preserving it is a conservative one. Okay? Changing it would be a leftist move. Because it is pro-labor and pro-people, but it wouldn't be a conservative move. It would be a liberal move. And understanding these differences is key to understanding how to intelligently exercise the one fundamental right you have in this country that you have to respect and that you should honor, and that is the right to make your voice heard at the voting booth. If you walk in to vote and you just start looking for the D's, it is a 100% ironclad guarantee you are going to vote for somebody that you didn't intend to. You are going to vote for something you didn't intend to. Okay? Look past the labels. Look past just those basic words. Look deeper. Understand. And that helps you to understand how you're being manipulated, how you're being lied to, how you're being misled, and how you're being disinformed, to provoke you to create and to empower systems and processes that operate directly against your own best interest. Okay? And we see it all day long, right? If you go to, the rural South and find a bunch of people out there in the country that, they're poor, they don't have health care or access to it, and yet they'll still stand there and go, well, I'm against universal health care because that's socialism or because that's liberal, and I hate liberals. Here we go again. Here we go again. By the same token, it happens less often in the other directions, right? But you could just as easily say, well, I hate conservatives, so I don't want to keep Social Security, right? So now all of a sudden you're a right-wing liberal, right? Just because you don't want to label yourself as a conservative, you've just gone to opposite end of where you thought you were on the ideological spectrum just because of the confusion over those two words. And so it's just critically important for us to gain a better understanding of how these labels work and what they really mean and how they are misused and abused. to look maybe a little more deeper at that concept, you see often this idea is of, not everybody needs a college education. Okay, not every, that whole narrative is about anti-intellectualism, right? And it's directed especially at those folks like me, right? I come from a blue-collar background. My dad was a plastic injection mold maker in Michigan, and I'm here in the Rust Belt, and this idea that, you know, not everybody's got to be ivory tower academic and so on and so forth is pretty powerful here. And so if you can go out there and act as though you're champion of the people, you're going to hook a lot of folks right away. And that's what Trump did, right? I see a comment pop up here. The commenter, Cindy, says, actually, the only difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is the billionaire calling the shots. I don't completely disagree with that, but I think it's important to understand that there are more differences than that. Fundamentally, the GOP is locked into this idea of discrimination and hierarchical behavior based on external criteria like skin color or religion or sexuality. And that's the thing that you don't see very often in the Democratic Party. And so I think there is some key difference there. But at the same time, I think it's also very important to validate that whatever the difference is between those two political parties is not what the difference is between left and right or between liberal and conservative. And there are a whole lot more differences between you and I versus Donald Trump and Michael Bloomberg, right? If you're a hardcore Republican and I'm a hardcore Democrat, you and I are going to have more in common than, yeah, it's, I'm lost my train of thought there a little bit. I was going to make an analogy and then I forgot where it was going to end up. Sorry about that. But, and yeah, this is, Cindy, I hit on that hard last night, right? Just the whole idea that we're in this period of enforced ignorance, frankly. We have almost done away completely with civic education. We've come, there's another one, by the way, critical thinking, right? And that goes into that anti-intellectualism thing again, right? If you say the phrase critical thinking, there's a lot of people in this country that just kind of immediately shut off. They stop thinking, right? Oh, well, you're a critic. You're a critical thinker. You think you're so smart. No, I think I'm just trying to exercise my brain to understand things, right? I'm questioning. That's all. I want to clear things up. I want to have a clear understanding. That's critical thinking. Not standing around bitching. Being a critic, right? Being a criticizing is not being critical. It's two different things. And again, it's language, right? Certainly, yeah, and that's that the thing with Trump and Michael Bloomberg is where I was trying to go with that analogy, and I can't quite remember how I was going to phrase it. It sounded great in my head, and it didn't come out of my mouth right. But, fundamentally, if you are a hardcore right-wing conservative and I am a hardcore left-wing liberal, you and I have more in common together, I'm still not phrasing that right. I'm just going to drop it and set it off to the side because I keep framing it the wrong way. Donald Trump and Michael Bloomberg have far more in common than you and I have separating us. Does that make sense? Right? If you're a Republican and I'm a Democrat, you and I agree on a lot more things than either of us agrees with that is coming from that world. Right? Donald Trump and Mike Bloomberg are both wealthy. New York, they're East Coast. They both have serious problems with racism. They both have serious problems with respecting women. These two guys are very close to peas in a pod. Thank you very much, Cindy. I appreciate you stopping in and I appreciate your comments. I always like to use comments and that's one of the reasons why I spend time on social media is so that because it provokes my own thought. processes. So I appreciate you stopping by, and I hope to see more folks coming through here as we go. So we're down to about 15 minutes right now until the end of the show. One of these days, I'll figure out how to formulate that thing that I was trying to say about Trump and Bloomberg versus the rest of us. Yeah, if you go to johnhenry.us, which the link is here somewhere, johnhenry.us will have a link to my Facebook page, and yeah, you can contact me through there, and we can go from there. The Facebook page is actually it's Facebook/johnhenry.us, and you can see that on the bottom of the screen as well. So I'm sorry, it's I blew it. It's facebook.com/johnhenryus. Thank you very much. And yeah, like I said, I'd be happy to read whatever information you've got. Certainly, it sounds like what you're saying is very similar to what I'm saying, and has a lot of common ground there. So hopefully, if nothing else, I can glean some information out of it that might help me phrase things better and get it across. Excuse me. And again, thank you very much for stopping in and participating and engaging. I really love seeing you here. Boy, that comparison is really going to drive me nuts until I get it right. How do I phrase that? Donald Trump and Mike Bloomberg have far more in common than either you or I have separating us. Nope, that's not right either. Oh, well. This is what I get for going live, because then I end up thinking out loud while I'm live. But anyway, again, bringing it back to the core, to the point, to the headline, what we're talking about is liberal, right? That word liberal and the idea of liberalism, what it is, what it isn't, why it matters. So number one key point, people who make it their business to understand politics cannot agree what the word liberal means, or who is a liberal. Thank you very much, Cindy. Have yourself a great night. I really do appreciate you, and I hope to see you again soon. Political scientists, well-qualified political scientists. I mean, I'm not talking about Google University political scientists. I'm talking about the people who taught me what I know, and the people who taught them what they know. They cannot agree on what constitutes a liberal other than a liberal is somebody who wants change. That is the fundamental definition of a liberal. And that can include everybody from, you know, Milton Friedman or Adolf Hitler all the way on up to, you know, Che Guevara. So liberal itself as a political label doesn't really have a lot of meaning. It's a great word to throw around if you want to argue with people, but it doesn't mean much, because that tent of liberalism can cover just about everybody. There aren't very many people in the world who don't want to see something change, right? So that becomes a very dangerous thing to just attach yourself to that label and then to judge the merits of information that you're receiving based on their use of that label. And of course, you know, I'm not even going to name the group, but there's a gigantic Facebook page out there that includes that word liberal in their name. And I have had, you know, serious run-ins with the people who started that page and who ran it for years. And I think most of them have cashed out now and they're not even involved anymore. But there's nothing liberal about them. I mean, those people are jackbooted thugs, man. They will do anything to shut up anybody that criticizes them or anybody that opposes them. I don't know why my phone's ringing. Nobody uses that phone, but anyway. That page still ends up with millions of followers, you know, or a million at least. There's another page, and again, I'm not trying to get into the whole sordid backstory of backstage internecine warfare on Facebook groups, but there's a big group called Occupy Democrats. Occupy. Oh, I love that Occupy movement, man. They're, yeah. And Democrats. Oh, yeah, let's occupy the Democratic Party. That sounds really radical. And it's just, it's not, right? That label was, you could have almost chosen that by AI to appeal to a defined audience. right? I want people who are left-wing and don't like Republicans to like my page. I'm going to use that word occupy because that's for the people and that makes them feel like they're part of something. And then I'm going to use Democrats because that says left-wing and liberal. None of that says anything like that. And the guys who run those, you know, the guy that runs that page is, you know, he's a Florida politician, right? That page exists basically as a campaign vehicle for him because he was trying to get over as a politician and make some money. And that's the reality of it. I mean, I've had conversations directly with him, and one of the things that struck me about that conversation, maybe I'll drag it out one time, was his definition of success is money, right? And we have conversation, and he's trying to convince me to kind of walk away from one group of people and walk, you know, join another group of people or throw my lot in with another group of people. And it's, oh, well, you know, how much money is so-and-so making doing their thing versus what we're doing? How many readers does so-and-so have versus what we're doing? The number of eyeballs on the work is important to me because I want information to get out. That's why I'm doing this. I want people to hear what I'm saying and to learn from it and to consider it. Question it, argue with it if you want to, right? If do it to yourself unless you're going to do it well, but that's just my thing because I get tired of arguing the same things back and forth over with the same people all the time. But you know, the idea is to propagate information for the good of people, right? I don't care as a matter of motivation. I have zero interest in how much money I can make doing this, right? The only reason I care about making money doing this is so that I can do it better. You're looking at my set, right? I don't have lighting and a fancy green screen behind me. I don't have the pretty glass desk. I don't have a nice suit and tie to sit here like, you know, like the cats over at TYT or whatever, and no diss to them. They've done a great job, but still, I'm sitting in a basement with a webcam and a $150 microphone that I was lucky to be able to get, right? And that conveys a... it ends up looking like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. If you're so smart, how come you can't afford better gear? And that's the kind of thinking that I'm trying to push against. And to pull the blanket back on this concept of liberalism, I think, is one good way to sort of illustrate that. Because a lot of people think of themselves as liberal who really aren't that liberal. Right? God. There's just so many things that go through your head when you start thinking about this stuff. When FDR implemented the New Deal programs after the Depression and coming into World War II, those programs were very liberal. Okay, because they hadn't been done before. Not because they were leftists or they empowered people, but because they had not, that's not the way things were going then. That's not the way things were done then. Now, to repeal some of those things, right? I'm pretty sure it was FDR who implemented Social Security, which I've used before in this program as an example. So when Social Security was implemented, it was a liberal idea because it was a radical change from the status quo of that time. Now, to repeal Social Security would be the truly liberal idea. Because it's a radical change. Don't confuse liberalism with leftism or with progressivism or with anti-authoritarianism. They are not the same things, right? And if you want to go all the way to, you know, Godwin's law, certainly the rise of the National Socialist Party in Germany in the 30s was a very liberal and radical thing. It was grossly in opposition to the established status quo in that country at that time. Right? And again, that's not to say anything stupid like, oh, liberals are Nazis or any of that crap. It's just to open your eyes and maybe throw just a little bit of ice water on your back while you're in the shower and thinking about this stuff to say, hey, wait a minute. How am I thinking about this? Is the way I'm thinking about this effective, or am I getting caught up in somebody else's nonsense? Am I getting caught up in somebody else's trap where now I'm stuck in this envelope arguing liberals and conservatives? Oh, he's a conservative. I've got to argue with him. He's a liberal. He's a conservative. I got to vote for him, against him. He's a liberal. I got to vote for him. Or the other way around. No, you've got to start rejecting some of these basic labels and looking deeper. And if we can reach a point of political and media literacy where that kind of considered approach and more critical approach is the norm, then these games stop working, right? Then it's not going to be enough for David Duke to just come out and say, I'm a liberal Democrat, and catch, 30% of the vote just because people hit the D box. I'm a Democrat, I'll vote for him. Okay. Right, because obviously David Duke is he's a radical racist. He was, Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, and again, he ran on the Democratic ticket. That is not a reflection on the Democratic Party. That is an example of how people use words to bullshit you. Okay, that's an example of how people use labels and words with heavy emotional value one way or the other. Trigger words, things that make you feel very powerfully. People whose job it is to appeal to the public, whether it's politicians or what have you, they understand this stuff. A lot of them get it kind of instinctively, right? You see those good salesmen out there. Stephen King's book, The Dead Zone, featured a politician as the antagonist, a guy by the name of Greg Stilson, who is very much like Donald Trump, right? And if you read that book, it's almost like a blueprint for the Trump campaign. It's the hard hats and the, pretending to be a man, working man. I'm for the people. No. Okay. Same thing we get, and I'm going to close this off here in a second. I'm 4 minutes above the hour, and it's time to go. But people always talk about government like it is a separate thing from the rest of us, like it's some sort of entity that sits outside of us and acts independently of us. And the reality is, we live in a democratic system. Please don't waste my time pointing out that it's a republic. I know. We live in a democracy, a democratic republic. And that is why it is important for us to understand this stuff. Because at the end of the day, the government is not a separate entity. It's us. You and I are the government of this country. We make the decisions. We have the power. We are not peons. You are not a peon. You've just been convinced that's what you are. We are not helpless. You are not helpless. You've just been convinced that's what you are. Okay? The fact that our two major political parties in this country are both pretty right-wing and pretty Republican does not mean that none of us have hope. It does not mean there's no point. It doesn't even mean there's no point in choosing one or the other. Okay? Because there's enough difference there. And that's the conversation I was having with Cindy earlier on her comment. I used to say that, right? I used to draw out as a mathematical equation the absolute value of the difference between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is less than 5 cents. Okay? That was something that I used to write a lot. And I came to understand that it's not quite true. There are important aspects of both of those parties that they share in common, not the least of which is that they're both essentially run as plutocracies, right? They are both very much controlled by money. They are both very much controlled by and in the interests of the ownership class. And they are both, certainly 2016 proved that the Democratic Party is no more democratic than the Republican Party is. Right. The actions of the Democratic Party in 2016 were by definition small R Republican, right? They were by definition that whole idea of an elite subset of the population being selected and elected to represent and to consider the goals and aspirations of the greater population. That's what a republic is. As opposed to a direct democracy where it's just one person, one vote, right? That's the Democratic Party are Republicans. Our job is because that Republican, small R Republican structure within the Democratic Party has been co-opted by plutocrats and oligarchs. And so now it's all being controlled in the interests of the wealthy elite. Our job is to redemocratize that party, and that's what Bernie Sanders is doing right now. That's why Sanders is running under the Democratic ticket. There's no way anybody running outside of a major political party right now is going to win the election ever. It's just not going to happen. Not only is it politically and socially unlikely, mathematically, it's not going to happen. One of these days, I have to do a show on Duverger's law and why the two-party system is not something that is imposed on us by some sort of conspiracy. But that's a tangent we'll get into later. So, anyway, it is my clock is showing 9 p.m., which means I've been on for an hour, and that means we are going to go ahead and wrap it up. I do appreciate everybody stopping by who stopped by, certainly. Cindy tonight, with her input and comments, was very helpful and helped me focus my thoughts on some things. And yeah, this, again, watch the labels, folks, because you got Donald Trump claiming he's a Republican and a conservative and a right winger, and then you've got Michael Bloomberg claiming he's a Democrat and a liberal and a left winger, and they really are both two sides of the same coin, and the two of them have far less differences between them than you and I have with both of them. Okay? Neither one of them have our interests in mind. So, we the people need to take our brains back and to start using them and to do the critical thinking and do the hard work of understanding these issues so that we can continue on a path of prosperity, progress, and peace to a country and ultimately a world where each and every human being has every possible opportunity to be their most fulfilled selves. That is what human utopia is all about. That I could be born, I can be born into a system that allows me to find my passions and interests, and then that system empowers me to pursue those passions and interests to the greatest extent possible, assuming that those passions and interests don't include violating the rights of other people. So, join me, won't you? We're trying to move into the future and evolve. And it's starting right here with John Henry, your steel driving man, one of the very few truly independent media voices in this country. Thank you very much for tuning in to the John Henry Show on this Tuesday. And thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, I've got a podcast now. I'm available on not iTunes, but I am available on Spotify and several other services. You can find all that stuff on my website at johnhenry.us. Like, share, subscribe, tell everybody, bring them on in, and we will see you tomorrow night, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you very much, and have a great night.